Welcome to On The Money, where you can find out anything and everything to do with finance, business and the economy. On The Money is broadcast live from the studios of Radio 2SER in Sydney and broadcast nationwide on the Community Radio Network. I'm Daniel Ellison, and coming up on the program...
They are targeting people who don't have a lot of money, and I would call it predatory lending.
In 2017, approximately 10.5 million Australians travelled overseas, up 6.9% from 2016. With so many of us taking international trips, how do we avoid unnecessary transaction fees? All this and more coming up on The Money. But first, as 2019 begins, so too does a new era for the financial planning sector. By 2022, all financial planners will require a tertiary qualification in their profession, and it is estimated that up to a third of planners may exit the industry instead of adhering to the new regime. I spoke with members of the Financial Planners Association to see how this would affect this much maligned industry. As Australian financial planners head back to work in 2019, they're beginning to face the prospect of having to go back to school as well. The Financial Advisor Standards and Ethics Authority released its Education Pathways policy this week, which will apply to all new and existing financial planners. This policy is designed to ensure all planners have a bachelor's degree at a minimum and should eventually result in the establishment of a Bachelor's of Financial Planning in Australia, which will become the standard qualification for those seeking future entry into the industry. Planners in Australia currently bring a wide range of educational backgrounds to their profession, with the minimum requirement until now being a Diploma of Financial Planning earned through private colleges. It is estimated that up to a third of planners will leave the industry rather than be forced into upskilling. Louise Lacomi, a planner for over 17 years, believes university qualifications will go a long way to instilling trust in the public.
It's not the be-end-all. It's about the community's expectation. The community's expectation that is, if I go and see someone about my finances, that they'd have a degree.
Louise is a member of the Financial Planners Association, and she believes the FPA has been incredibly proactive in preparing herself and fellow members for this transition.
The reality is the FPA, a few years ago, was a step ahead of the game because they our members were getting annoyed by being tarred by the one brush, and we said, OK, well, our members have to be degree qualified. Our members have to do ethics. So we've already, a step of the game, in a sense, is that our members have already abided by most of the rules.
By 2022, all planners will be required to hold at least a tertiary qualification or equivalent in some aspect of finance. Currently, a Bachelor's of Financial Planning is not available at Australian universities, meaning that every planner will need to be brought up to a standardised level, no matter their current experience or education. Many experts have predicted that fully a third of all planners will leave the industry as a result, but Ben Marsham, head of the policy and standards at the Financial Planning Association, believes as the uncertainty is lifted, planners will see this as a pathway to legitimacy.
We've had a level of indication from some of our members that they are looking to leave. I think a lot of that has been due, though, to the uncertainty and not knowing what these new education requirements would actually look like. Now that we're starting to get the details and starting to understand what it would look like, a lot less of them are likely to leave.
Louise believes this is an incredibly important step that will legitimise an industry that she knows plays an important role in society.
I think it's a necessary requirement to move my favoured career, which is financial planning, to be called a true profession. For me, it's about, me as a professional, I want the community to know that we are degree qualified, that we can move on.
But while FASIA's new policy may go a long way to instilling public trust in planners, many from the industry see these changes as nothing more than icing on a dirt cake. Eric Kohlmeier, a practicing planner for over 30 years, believes that these measures will solve nothing in terms of what he calls much deeper problems lurking below the surface.
I love this industry, absolutely love it. But having said that, when I read the findings of the Haying Royal Commission, I feel ashamed to know that this stuff is still being carried on. And I'm absolutely furious, if not disgusted, with those in Canberra that have, in my view, condoned Heck, I'd even go down the path of encouraging it.
Eric has no objections to increasing standards of education within his industry, but believes that without strong regulation on advisor behaviour, people will continue to fall victim to planners who are only interested in making a quick buck.
Education alone is not going to do it. A follow-through from a regulatory point of view with some real teeth, including basically not only throwing people out of the industry, but also going down the path of perhaps imposing a custodial sentence for people who go the wrong way. Because I've seen some terrible outcomes for clients. I've seen some terrible outcomes where people have been gotten at by people simply flogging product, and that is not what advice is about.
For the FPA's part, Ben Marsham and his team believe that by ensuring their members adhere to a more rigorous code, not only are FPA-led advisors more prepared for the regime change, but should also instill greater trust in the public that their interests will be looked after.
I think on the most part, consumers aren't aware of these changes that are going on in financial planning. It's been a little bit difficult while we're going through the transition, and we haven't had certainty to be able to really go out there and tell consumers that this is happening. As I said before, our members are generally a lot more educated and a lot more experienced than the general population of financial planners. So consumers have always been able to trust FPA members because they do have higher education levels, they are certified, and they have voluntarily adhered to a code of ethics, which we hold them accountable against. So consumers should have a lot of trust in FPA members, and it's the best place to start looking for a financial planner if a consumer is looking to find a trusted professional to partner with.
Eric Kohlmeyer is very concerned with the way ASIC is involved with pricing between product manufacturers and those selling the products, something he believes is highly questionable.
Quite frankly, there is no other industry that's subjected to the same regime. That's not right. ASIC's function is not to get involved in commercial arrangements between a product supplier and a product manufacturer. It's not there to do that. It's there to regulate and to make sure that everyone is towing the line. That's not happened.
Part of the new education regime will be a three-hour exam that all advisors will need to sit. Louise Lacomi questions why members of this industry will be required extra assessment when virtually no other industry comes under the same scrutiny.
They're going to be sitting their exams. They're going to be doing much more study than ever before. So why make... Because at the end of the day, all this cost just gets transferred onto the clients. And I'm not sure about the time, the effort, you know, all these universities. Yeah, universities. Yep. More exams. But I'm just not sure it's achieving anything.
Which, for Eric, is evidence of a policy decision taken without due consideration for how it will affect those who these laws were initially designed to protect in the first place.
So I don't have any problem with the idea of increasing education standards. I do, however, question the methodology. And I question the methodology in terms of what is this designed to do? If the system is designed to improve outcomes, then I take you back to the actual intention of FOFA, the Future of Financial Advice. What was their primary intention? Well, if you take a look at the objectives as stated in their website from Treasury, they haven't achieved any of it.
Australian financial advisors have been given until 2022 to get their education up to code, which for Eric will hopefully be enough time for the rest of the industry to come on board and start delivering high-quality service to those who need it the most.
So clean up the industry, less focus on the education side, apart from that which is practical, and more enforcement from a regulatory point of view, and proper enforcement at that, without the conflicts. And there's lots of conflicts.
Eric Kohlmeyer, financial planner and member of the FPA, ending that report. I'm Daniel Ellison, and you're listening to On The Money around the nation on the Community Radio Network. Automated teller machines, which provide almost instant cash loans, have recently started appearing across Sydney and New South Wales. However, the locations of these new machines has begun a concerning trend. These ATMs have been rolled out in the shopping centres of low-income neighbourhoods. Some say these ATMs are targeting those who need cash quickly, and are then slugged with high interest rates and fees. Kevin Suarez has the story.
There may be occasions where we need a little bit of extra cash, whether we're stranded without a wallet or need something to send to a friend. Instant loan ATMs claim to have our backs, and we can pay off the amount at a later date. However, sometimes ideas can get lost in the execution. Instant loan ATMs have begun popping up around coastal New South Wales in low-income areas. Some have criticised the placement of these ATMs, saying they are targeting people who need money most and will disregard the consequences. But how do they work?
They work like an online application for a payday loan, except they're in-store and you basically go up, the machines look exactly like an ATM. And you basically go up, you provide some information, such as your personal details, your mobile phone information, your internet banking details as well, and a debit card. And then if you're approved, you can basically get your funds instantly.
I spoke with Liz Barry, personal loans editor at finder.com.au. So which areas can we expect to see these ATMs showing up?
This is actually the first instant loan ATMs that I've come across. They're actually popping up in kind of a few strategic areas, I would call them, so kind of lower socioeconomic areas. And they're all being offered by one specific company. So it's kind of the first instance of payday loan ATMs we've actually seen.
While these machines seem convenient, for many, they could be too good to be true. Ms. Barry explained what could be some of the consequences of using these machines.
Payday loans are extremely, extremely high cost loans, so you should really only be taking these out if they are a last resort. The issue with these machines is they're making them very, very convenient. You really, really need to be taking some precautions before you take out these loans and also looking at some of your other options. The issue with these machines are if they're making them too convenient, people might be not taking their due diligence and actually seeing if they have other options available.
But what about the location of the machines? Ms. Barry says there seems to be a strategy to the rollout.
One of the main criticisms of payday loans is that they target financially vulnerable people. And as I mentioned before, they are being put in quite strategic locations. They're being put in lower socioeconomic areas, such as in the Central Coast and in Minto. And if they are found to be kind of targeting those people, you know, it's just really not okay to kind of be targeting specific areas with really high cost loans and just making them really convenient to be taken out.
The rollout of the ATMs don't seem to be slowing down, but Ms. Barry says there's a chance the government may intervene.
It'll be interesting to kind of see if there's any kind of clampdown on these payday loan ATMs. I mean, at the moment, you know, this company can kind of keep putting them out there and keep putting as many payday loan ATMs. But as we've seen in the past, there have been a lot of restrictions in how payday loans can be offered and how much lenders can charge. So we'll just have to wait and see if they will still be allowed to exist.
Graham Smith is the chairperson of the Financial Counselling Association of New South Wales, and he's all too familiar with the impact these machines are having in a lower income area of the Hunter Valley.
Oh, look, I'm a financial counsellor. I work in the Hunter Valley, and the clientele that come into our emergency relief scheme, their bank accounts indicate that they're getting loans from these companies because they didn't have any money. And they were seeking assistance from us for food vouchers, for assistance with their electricity bills because of payments to these loan companies.
He says this has been a growing concern for the past year and is an issue other financial counsellors have been attempting to resolve as well.
I've been aware of them for just on over 12 months now, and they have been a concern that has come from other financial counsellors where people are coming to see financial counsellors and got these debts that they are finding very difficult to repay, that they haven't got enough money to afford these loans.
We're used to how standard bank loans operate, but the fees and interest rates associated with loans from the ATMs are quite different.
We've got two issues here. We've got regular credit offered by the mainstream providers, and we've got what is called the payday lending market. And the payday lending market, which targets a specific group of people, their base interest rate is 48%. So you borrow $500, you end up paying back close to $1,000. That's if you pay it all back. If you miss payments, then fees and charges are added. And it can add up to be hundreds of percent on a small loan that you got that you end up can't affording.
If you're in need for some quick cash, Mr. Smith says these ATMs shouldn't be an option. He provided some alternatives.
Firstly, they can see a financial counsellor and they can ring what is called the National Debt Helpline, which is 1-800-007-007. They can also inquire about the no-interest loan scheme, which is a small, again, loans scheme, but there's no interest or no fees and no charges. They borrow, for example, $800, and that's all they pay back is $800. The scheme is about essential items, you know, car repairs, fridge, freezers, washing machines. So that's an alternative that they could turn to, rather than getting caught up in predatory lending.
There are only a handful of instant loan ATMs located around New South Wales, but they have apparently become very popular amongst the locals.
I've had reports that last Christmas there was a queue out the door of people seeking these loans. They're also located in shops that people often frequent, so they're certainly targeted in an area that people will go to regularly, and they'll see the machine there and be tempted by the fact that this machine there and they can get a loan very quickly and they think they're solving their financial problems. But in my opinion, they're creating an even worse financial situation for themselves.
The chair of the Financial Counselling Association of New South Wales, Graham Smith, ending that report by Kevin Suarez. At the time of broadcast, the owners of the ATMs, Cash and Go, have not responded to our request for an interview. You're listening to On The Money. We all love our honey, and Australian honey is one of our most popular exports. Recently, the Cooperative Research Centre for Honeybee Products has revealed a new way for consumers to know the level valued antioxidants in their honey. Kevin Suarez has more.
The government-sponsored Cooperative Research Centre for Honeybee Products has recently unveiled the Unified Antioxidant Factor, a product that allows consumers to know the level of antioxidants in honey. Antioxidants provide protection against harmful molecules called free radicals, which can cause damage to the body, such as blood vessel diseases and even cancer. To explore more about the Unified Antioxidant Factor, I spoke to food and agricultural researcher Edward Plankin about why the UAF was created.
This whole project's about honey, measuring antioxidants in honey. And work I did many years ago actually was able to show and prove that there had been studied before that there are honeys of high antioxidant activity. But while they're saying that, nobody's actually made it very simple for consumers. And if you look at a lot of the products on the shelf, even in supermarkets, they'll say high in antioxidants, high in antioxidants. But what are they really saying as a consumer? What's that really mean to us as a consumer? And how do I differentiate that product to another product? So when we put a value next to it, this contains so many spores of prebiotic, you know, each spoonful takes you 5,000 spores per teaspoon. It means something. And then you can compare that, oh, this one has 10,000 spores of probiotic in my honey. Then you know it's real. And so the antioxidant, the whole system, is saying, okay, we measure for this, we do the calculations and simplify it, and then you can make a legitimate claim that we've got a honey and a beautiful product here, which is high in antioxidant factors.
So how did the Unified Antioxidant Factor originate? Mr. Plankin has more.
Rosie Liu, who started One Foods, was the initiator of the program, and she developed, there was a unique niche in the market to differentiate Australian honey, and particularly Western Australian honey. And she's found that in a lot of active honeys over time, there are differentials or degenerations over time in their values, whereas antioxidant values tend to remain fairly stable. So then she started looking at what research had been done with the science, with the universities and other people in Australia, here on the Sunshine Coast, in Sydney, in Perth, UWA, and found it was a real possibility that we could actually work this through into this product, which is what we've actually done. So all that work went on in the background, and then last year, in November last year, she formally registered the UAF organisation, and then in February of this year, beginning of February, she gave me the invite. She said, would you come onto the committee as well because of your 35, 40 years experience in the honey industry, not only in Australia but around the world through your world presidencies and all the rest. Would you also come in and help us bring this all together and, you know, try and validate things.
Dr. Liz Barber is the CEO of the Cooperative Research Centre for Honey Bee Products and says there are still some challenges facing the bee industry, including how beekeepers can maintain bees and what problems they've had in boosting the numbers of beekeepers.
We didn't have a pathway to become a beekeeper. It was a family business and it sort of was went by generation in the family. So what we're trying to do is actually create a pathway. Say you decided tomorrow, geez, I'd love to be a beekeeper. And you wouldn't, there is just no way now that you could actually get into it. So what we're trying to do now is actually do the training part into the cadetship or the trainingship and then go all the way through to be your own beekeeper. From being a hobbyist to being a professional beekeeper is completely, utterly different. The biggest issue when you become a professional beekeeper is to keep your bees fed and going year-round. You know, everybody seems to think, oh, you know, beautiful flowering crop. Well, that's for a moment in time, you know, and you basically have to have six good flowering crops in a year to keep your bees going at least.
Dr. Barber also said that there were also other ways to find out about the benefits of using honey, including her very own Medigum.
What we do is we supply the information to the company to take what they want. So what we've been doing is just, you know, any sort of information, scientific information that One Food Honey has actually wanted to develop this product, they've actually come to us and we've actually helped them. That's our role. We're not in the commercial market. We actually support companies to be successful. That's actually what we're trying to do. We're trying to help people to put quality products on the shelf that actually are protected from shelf right the way through, from the tree field right the way through to shelf. So that's our role. We don't make money. We help others to create their businesses, make sure that they're quality businesses.
The medical honey Medigum was promoted alongside the UAF index as being an alternative use for honey.
We also want to pin down a bit more about the antioxidant activity, you know, what the actual effects are. Because remember, you either swallow honey or, of course, what we do, and we don't do enough of, is actually put it on our skin. I mean, the biggest thing that's actually happened, you know, with all the Manuka story, which, you know, is that you actually can put it on your skin for the healing. So, in honey, there's two types of antimicrobial activity. You either get the Manuka, which is the DHA to MGO, or you get what's called a hydrogen peroxide honey. So the hydrogen peroxide honey is a bit of more of a general honey that actually generally kills more bacteria, whereas the DHA is more precise in terms of activity. But when you're going and you get to a situation where you've run out of antibiotics, you know, honey is a really good choice, and there are so many surgeons even in Perth that are coming back and saying, you know, please can we have some fresh Jarrah, or fresh mainly Jarrah honey is what we use, but it has to be fresh, and use it on the wound, and it does amazing things.
Mr. Plankin says there's a bright future for the UAF as they plan to expand what products are covered by the index.
Long term, they're bringing in other industries as well. So when they make a claim about this is high in antioxidants, that they can legitimise the claim and have a measurable amount. So tell the consumer that my cereal is high in antioxidants, be able to say to what level. Because there's a lot of fraud and things in the food industry. It really is. People make all sorts of claims. It's ridiculous. So unless you can validate them and verify them, and that's through independent auditing, third party, so people that are abstract to the business come in through like any food auditing program, an external company comes in and then checks, is your bacterial levels right? Have you done this? Have you done your pesticides? Have you done all these things to say we're a quality endorsed organisation, and they tick you off and then they say you're recertified for another 12 months.
Dr. Eduardo Plankin, ending that story from Kevin Suarez. That's all we have time for on the Money this week. We hope you'll tune in again next week to find out everything you need to know about money, finance and business. G'day if you are listening in to Wet Tank FM in Kempsey or Alpine Radio 96.5 FM in the Victorian Alps or 8CCC in Alice Springs. Thanks very much to producer Kevin Suarez and, as always, our executive producer, Rod Chambers. On the Money is produced in the studios of Radio 2SER for the Community Radio Network. You can find all our shows and stories at 2ser.com/onthemoney. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter, look for @onthemoney2ser, and find us on Facebook. We'll be back again next week to give you the inside running on everything financial. I'm Daniel Ellison. Thanks very much for your company.
Sideways Through Sound is your weekly dose of strumming, droning, and psychedelic reverie. Sideways Through Sound's pathways for the guitar travel across spotlight albums, interviews, and live studio sessions. Each week, Sideways Through Sound brings you the best in folk-flavored acoustica and shimmering psychedelia. So sit back and relax with The Sonic Assassin every Wednesday from 8 p.m. right here on 2SER 107.3.
I get step, kick, kick, knee, kick, touch. 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 Right. That connects with turn, turn, out, in, touch, step, step, kick, kick, deep, kick, touch. Got it? Going on, and turn, turn, touch, down, back, step, pivot, step, walk, walk, walk. Right, let's do the whole combination, facing away from the mirror, from the top, on 5, 6, 7, 8. Let's do the valley combination. First group of girls, second group follow. A 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Thank you.